No, I was going to say churros number one, you know, birth of my son, marriage, being born myself, you know. But yeah, churros definitely at the top of the list.
Whenever you guys are ready. You ready to roll for this?
I'm ready to roll once I'm ready to roll, which is not yet.
Oh, fuck.
I'm rolling.
All right, don't say anything yet. I'm rolling too.
No, you can say it. We're just going to have to wait longer.
17.
Oh.
2.
Oh.
Not going to be me.
Sorry, guys.
It's supposed to be like quick and awesome.
16. Ah.
Oh, so close.
All right, Josh wins again.
I win again. Welcome to the Escort Mission Podcast. This is Josh.
This is Mike.
That's Mike.
Charles.
That's Charles.
That's Charles.
This is a smooth intro.
Oh, rehearsed.
I'm just pointing at people instead of actually verbally.
You did
hosting.
Not point at people. You went like this. You swept your arm across the room.
Yeah, you did a sector sweep.
Yes, well, I am definitely the most polished host.
He thinks about this shit, people.
So, yeah. You ready for this?
I'm ready.
Bow, bow, bow.
Charles, open us up with some business.
Oh, yes, business. There's business. If you want to help out the show, go to our website, theescortmission.com.
Don't be a dick. Help out the show.
Help out the show. We're not asking for donations. We just want you to click on... if you're going to buy something on Amazon, click through our Amazon link, and then we get some change, but it doesn't cost you any more when you buy whatever you're going to buy on Amazon, whatever that may be. So, yeah, it helps the show, and then we can do cool things like buy cough buttons and lavaliers and interesting things. So,
pop screens if you're getting too much pop
with those percussive sounds. All right, you just got given the business.
And it's not even like a couple cents. It's actually like a couple percent, which is awesome.
Yeah. It's good.
Amazon's
good. All right. So far, we've made $1 and like 35 cents.
Nice.
So,
yes. Oh, yeah. You know, Charles, didn't we apply for another affiliation and got turned down? Who was that? Who turned
that
us
was
down?
iTunes. We applied for the iTunes affiliate program and they like declined. You may reapply in 15 days.
And they didn't even say why.
They said nothing about it other than like,
So we're going to reapply like every 15 days forever?
I don't know what the deal is. Like, I don't understand. I was trying to think of like, you know, the first thing that comes to mind is, you know, if you don't have enough listeners, they don't want you to be an affiliate program. But it seems like any additional revenue is additional revenue. So why wouldn't they just, you know, they have plenty of explicit podcasts on there. I don't get it. I was confused.
They're just not the slut that Amazon is. They
apparently
won't just let
not.
Anybody in.
Yeah.
I guess. I don't know. They're Apple. Come on. What do you expect?
So anything that we recommend on the music tip, don't buy it through iTunes. Go to Amazon's marketplace and do it there.
Yeah, what he said.
All right. So what's happening this week, Mike?
Oh, me first. Oh, shit. I wasn't ready, except I'm looking at all
the
topics.
All right, not you.
No, I'm ready.
Fail.
No, I'm ready.
Nope, fail. Charles.
Oh, my God. This week, I have a... So, the number one thing I want to talk about...
Charles has taken up sewing, apparently.
...is I made fucking homemade churros.
What?
Oh, shit.
You mean churros?
I mean churros.
Oh,
they
yes.
were
did
so
you,
good.
Did you pump them through a churro-shaped nozzle?
So here's what happened with that. Let me describe the whole process. So it's just like flour and water, and right? So I mixed up the cinnamon and sugar, and there's egg, and you know, there's a recipe, and I fried them in canola oil. So I couldn't find...
Do you own a deep fryer?
No, I just have a wok. I just did them in a wok.
A wok.
Which was fine.
A wok.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Dude. Seriously, this is like
Continue, please.
The best thing that ever happened
Continue.
To me. you know, it's
besides
like,
the birth of your son and your
no,
marriage.
I was gonna say churros number one. You know, birth of my son, marriage, being born myself. You know, but yeah, churros definitely at the top of the list. So I did not have. You're supposed to do it with a pastry bag and a large pastry nozzle to get the appropriate churro size.
Or a steering wheel and a like a metal cylinder.
Right, yeah. If you have like something that can actually squeeze it out through, you know, like one of those Play-Doh. Did you ever have that Play-Doh
yes.
press
Yeah,
thing?
Totally.
Yeah, so you need one of those if you're really serious. But they're like, do
Apparently
it with
Charles
a pastry bag.
It. Charles is not serious
about this. I did not have that, and I could not find one, like, just at Ralph's.
So you use a Ziploc bag.
Exactly.
And you stick something at the end.
Oh, what I stuck at the
like
end,
a pastry squeezer.
To make my own pastry bag, right?
Yeah.
What I stuck at the end was a frosting nozzle, the biggest one I could find, and then I, like, cut into it to attempt to enlarge it. But I was still getting churros that were, like,
tiny,
like
misshapen
half
churros.
The size of a dime. But they were perfectly, functional. Like, star-shaped churros. Except what I realized, or what I have come to find out, is that pastry bags are, like, serious cooking implements, and a Ziploc bag is not that. So I'm squeezing these tiny mini churros out for, you know, right at the beginning, and then it just totally ripped a hole in the side. So what I did instead was I ended up just, like, squeezing out the hole in the side and cutting off, like, lumps of churro.
Yeah.
So I just have, like, donut holes, essentially. So the, you know, most of what I produced were donut holes and some, like, mini churros. But, dude, they're fucking awesome. You roll them in
arbitrary shapes. Just as good.
God, it was the greatest thing. So, homemade churros. I could put the, I'll put the link, not the link, the recipe on the show notes. So, yeah, homemade churros are
super good. So, did you bring us some?
I did not bring you any. This was a while ago. Yeah. They're only good if you do them right away.
I said,
sorry, guys.
Yes, invite me over next time.
Okay, yeah. We'll do it. We should do it before the show one day. Yeah. And then just...
Oh, live churro making.
The whole show will just be like... Oh, blah, 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 blah.
As we all now take a drink.
Yes. So on my way over here, also, I saw a murdered out Mini Cooper with the license plate frame that said, my other ride is a TIE fighter. And I thought that was pretty cool.
Is that a word now?
Did you say murdered?
Out? 100% black. It's a car guy term. So no chrome, black wheels, black paint, black mirrors, black roof, everything black.
Black windshield.
We're the, tinted.
We're talking about the taillights that are tinted.
They didn't have, like, smoked out taillights, no. But it's just like... Every piece of ornamentation is black. Black on black on
black. I'm
not
sure that was fully murdered unless
yeah,
it had
probably if technically to be murdered out, probably has to be flat black and smoked headlights and yeah.
Wow.
But matte. Yeah, like the Revington.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, I like the my other ride is a TIE fighter. That was cute. I've been playing some more trials. I got into the user generated content. In the previous Trials HD, they had they had the user-generated tracks, but you could only share them with people on your friends list, and there were, like, no rating systems, and so it basically just didn't get used, because it's not fun, unless you have a buddy who's super into it, and who doesn't care that he won't get no recognition whatsoever for doing them, like, just does it for his own pleasure. But now they do have a rating system, and I downloaded this track to kind of give you an idea of what some people are doing. There's a Terminator 2 track, so you're playing, you start... and you're like, it's like completely crazy and cinematic. There's, you know, you start in like the future war, John Connor with like the guy made this with the stuff that's in the game. So like oil cans and, you know, the tanker truck bodies and stuff. He made like those like flying Terminator gunship things and the big one that's on the tanks. And those are all like in the background shooting lasers at each other. And you're riding across the battlefield in the front.
Whoa.
And then you like hop over a fence and he's doing all kinds of cinematic sweeps with the camera. So you're like right behind the bike or right in front of it. And he recreated that chase from Terminator 2 with the big tanker truck that like busts off the, you know, the like the LA River, the culvert
thing. Yeah.
Like the tanker truck that busts off the top of that and slams down and the explosions and stuff. It's pretty dope. So people are doing some really cool stuff with that.
I thought the editor was on the 360.
Is it?
They're doing, so how is he can add you can add your own assets?
No, he built, you can make your own models.
Oh, he just used the assets to make it look like that.
Okay. Yeah, so he used different stuff to make the models look, to build, like there's no semi-truck in the game.
Right.
And there's one little shot of it from the top where you can see that it's actually constructed out of a lot of like concrete pipes. But everywhere else that you look at it, there's only this one like split second where you can see that. And the rest of the time, it looks like a semi that's hauling ass. So
that's
pretty
awesome.
Cool. Yeah, they're doing cool stuff there. There's a couple of musical recommendations. I know Mike's usually the music guy. But people should check out Graham Parker's song "Endless Night." Graham Parker from like the early '80s, '82, '83. There's a version of it that I have not been able to find that's featuring Bruce Springsteen that I just heard on another podcast, and it's super awesome. That's a great song. And then I also heard the Black Keys this week. You guys listen to Black Keys?
Mm-hmm. A little bit.
Yeah, pretty good. Gold on the Ceiling. Look up Gold on the Ceiling by the Black Keys. Nice, straight ahead. It's like I want to call it beard rock. Like,
don't they? Doesn't one of them have beard?
All right, I'm sold.
They've got beards.
makes everything better, right?
It's like the kind of like straight ahead rock and roll that hipsters would make, and I like it. It's good. That's
okay,
it.
Hipster.
Those are my. Oh no! One other thing. Assassin's Creed 3. I read a news story on it that totally blew my mind. Not 3 specifically, but just the whole Assassin's Creed series. Apparently,
I know what you're gonna say.
Every named character, you read the same thing on...
every death is a real life.
Every named character that is killed in Assassin's Creed, both, all, whatever, 12 games so far, has been a real historical person who actually died at that time in history.
Nice.
And that
is... The exact location and date.
Locations and dates are correct. With the
same weapon, but not by the same dude. Because it's your guy, right?
Not with the same weapon necessarily. Typically, what they said was that often the historical records aren't detailed enough to say like how they died
in the library with the candlestick.
Exactly.
By Professor Plum.
But that's pretty awesome. And so they said that that was giving them all kinds of problems doing Assassin's Creed 3 because most of the characters you'd be interested in having, you know, die don't actually die at that time. You know, like the British generals. Almost all of them don't die during the Revolutionary War. They die as old men back in England and other interesting things. So that was cool. That totally blew my mind. And it made me super, you know, it made me yet more hyped about Assassin's Creed 3 because I feel like that game, there's a very real chance that by the end of the game, it's going to turn out that your group, the assassins, are the villains and have been the villains of the entire piece. And I think that's going to be super interesting if indeed it happens. And you, by the end, your guy Desmond in the present is going to realize that he's been associated with completely the wrong people the whole time. You know, I think that's a completely real possibility. At least at this point in the story. So
wait, you're saying really that the group of assassins,
yeah,
it's the bad people.
Could be
they could the be the villains, bad people, and the Templars might be the good guys.
And you've been following the series, like playing every single one since the beginning.
Other than the first game. I never played Assassin's Creed 1.
Okay. So you played most of them, and you didn't know about the real life death thing.
I did not know about that until.
That's pretty cool.
I knew that they were using actual historical characters, because obviously they are, right? But I did not know that every single one of the people you're sent to assassinate, not like random guards on rooftops, right? But the named characters that you have
to
go
take out.
Yeah,
that's dedication. And there's not a clear way that they could communicate that to the audience without just like blaring it in advertisements or something.
Right. Yeah. Everyone you're killing was real. Like, but it's just a very interesting, you know, I like that they just made that choice early on and said like, this is how we're going to make our game.
Yeah, that's hardcore.
Yeah.
Ever wanted to kill famous people from the past by proxy? Buy our game. Nice.
All right. I'm next then. Ooh, instead of Mike.
Snap!
What is it? All right. Fine.
Hosted.
Well, I'll just people remember me because I'll be last.
So this week I got this thing. This thing is a Nook Simple Touch, or it's just
isn't
like
that Neil Stephenson?
It's basically the second generation Nook, and it's freaking tiny, and it couldn't really be a more perfect product. Almost it's virtually flawless. It's so good at what
it
does.
How big is the screen?
I appreciate I don't know, 6 inches. I appreciate the elegance of this device so much. It's hard to overstate. Like I have gadget what's the right word?
Lust.
Yes, I have gadget lust. You know, here and there, I love my Galaxy Nexus or PlayStation Vita, that sort of thing. But I almost have more lust over this simple little Nook version 2 that cost me $60 refurbished, because it's just so virtually perfect. It's really elegant. The you slide down in that on that screen probably.
Well, I would think because it's less. It has less functions, it's more focused, that it's easier for it to be more perfect.
It is.
It's not doing everything.
I think that's definitely the case. Yeah. You know, like a computer
or a watch,
Android phone
that you love,
or whatever.
It tells time, right?
Have a lot more functions, but a lot more potential to do things wrong. It is so light and small. The touch interface to change pages and stuff works really, really well. It's actually, it feels capacitive, but it isn't. It's actually an infrared grid.
Interesting.
That it, hovering over the screen.
Which from is the how edge, it, around the edge.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Which is how it does the touch detection. So the one minor advantage it has over capacitive is that it executes from line of sight, just breaking. So it works even with your fingernail, mm-hmm. not necessarily from the pad of your finger touching. Yeah. So you can do it with the back of your hand or whatever.
So I think that there is actually technology, and I'm not sure if it's infrared or laser or whatever, but that does that same grid thing that they were actually talking about being able to do pressure detection as well. But the kind of negative aspect to that is that you have to have that edge. You have to have the bezel edge.
Yeah, it does have to be inset lower than the surface. But that also serves the function of basically protecting the screen mm-hmm. a little bit.
Yeah.
Anyway, I love that thing. So I finished the Hunger Mockingjay. Games? Yeah, Hunger Games series.
Yeah.
Pretty good. Yeah. 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 Recommend it. You know, it's fun. Mm-hmm. The third book definitely got into what I wanted it to get into. Mm-hmm. It's really more like one book, the series. Mm-hmm. You should basically treat it like one book. Yeah. It doesn't feel complete at the end of the first or the second. And you if you stacked them all together, they'd be the size of a normal book, basically. So yeah, so now I gotta go see that movie. It definitely better than Twilight or even Harry Potter for the books, in my opinion. These popular like teenage
have you read the Twilight
zeitgeist
books?
I read the first Twilight book and uh-huh. the first Harry Potter book, and they both sucked.
Did you only read the first Harry Potter?
Yes, I only read the first Harry yeah. Potter, and it sucked.
Yeah, that's the that is the most juvenile on
I know.
purpose, right? And they get yeah. more and more adult as you
I know
go. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what people told me, like Mike, and I said, well, does that mean I should skip to the very last one to get to the more adult one that's more interesting? Mm-hmm. And everybody said, no, you should just read them all the way through. I said, yeah, but the early ones are boring and they suck because they're written for like eight-year-olds or something. And, you know, so I didn't want to slog through the beginning.
Gotcha.
Basically.
You could jump in halfway.
No, don't do that.
See?
Just give up.
He told me not to do
just
it.
Just give
Have
up.
You
he
seen
said
the
either give up or slog through the...
Well, that's bad advice. If you've seen the first like three movies, then jump in on book four and you're good to go.
Yeah, I did see the movies. They're good. In those cases, like the movies were better. Even the Twilight movie, better than the Twilight book.
The Twilight movie is good because it has extraordinarily interesting... Well, not extraordinarily. I like their house. I like the architecture.
Nice house.
Of their house.
Yeah. It's an architecture movie.
Yeah, it's not extraordinarily interesting, but it is a nice house, and it is super awesome and hilarious on riff tracks. That is the way that I've watched both all Twilight movies up until the current one. The riff tracks for Twilight is super great.
Yeah, you encouraged me to do that, but yeah. I don't feel comfortable with that. I don't know. I don't know about riff tracks.
What you talking about?
What I feel like riff tracks are like insulting and they.
What?
To who? The movie or
yes,
you?
Yes, to the movie.
Well, yeah, because it's a bad movie and that's the only way you
well,
can get through
it. Well, I wasn't sure if it was a bad movie because I hadn't seen it yet. So,
well, it's
you know,
a choice.
Like, they basically, in order to watch Riff Track, you have to have already seen the movie and thought it was bad.
No, you don't.
I think you do, because if you haven't if you haven't made a judgment on the movie on your own uh-huh. first, then you're basically going into it assuming it's going to suck. Mm-hmm.
And no, it doesn't have to suck. There are plenty of really good movies that I want to see the riff tracks of.
Really?
Yeah.
Like the only one I've watched...
There are riff tracks of all the Star Wars, and I can't wait to watch those.
Like, I watched Avatar, the riff tracks, yeah. after watching it in the movie theater and liking it, but the riff tracks version was hilarious, so...
Okay. Yeah, it's not because you think they suck necessarily.
Except I'm pretty sure the Twilight movies probably suck.
I've never watched a riff tracks for yeah. a movie that didn't suck. Uh-huh. So I should do that and see what it's like. Huh.
The reason
so Star Wars, let's do it for Star Wars.
We should totally do it for Star Wars. Yeah, I want to do it for Iron Man
or like The Matrix. Do they do Matrix? The Matrix?
I think
that
Matrix
would be a great one. Yeah. I think
that would be good. Actually, the later two Matrixes do suck. So it would be good to watch it for all.
I think I'm one of the few people that didn't think they sucked as much as everybody seems to think. But still, riff tracks would be sweet. I'm sure
they were all right.
I think any movie that takes itself seriously, the riff tracks is going to be fucking hilarious because that's the whole point. Is
my favorite part of the Avatar one was when the super buff military commander guy said, "You think I felt like a shaved tail, Louie?" And then one of the guys said, "That depends, sir. What the hell is a shaved tail, Louie?" Oh god, that cracked me up so much.
Good stuff.
Also, for the first time, I watched Dark Knight this week.
Really, the first time?
Yeah.
Wow.
It's
no
just
kidding.
One of those things I missed.
Wait, is that the one with Heath Ledger?
Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't seen that.
He was awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, no shit.
Are you surprised?
That's a really good movie.
Yeah, are you surprised? Are you surprised by that or something? Everybody in the world said he was good.
It's news to me 5 years later or whatever. But it was really interesting watching that after I played Arkham Asylum because I didn't really like Arkham Asylum. Mm-hmm. I can see what it did well, but my main beef with it was the whole comic booky, not very serious feel to it. And I know it kind of tried to take itself more seriously than maybe other comic booky things in the past. But Dark Knight, the movie, you know, goes so much more to the extreme of taking itself seriously and, you know, being darker, for lack of a better term, than the game. So Arkham City felt, you know, really, really cheesy, and I didn't believe any of the characters basically in any of it.
Yeah.
But Charles, you need to play Arkham City because because I know you'd love it, and so you need to get it over with. Just freaking play it so that you can have an opinion
pile of
on
shame
it
for a long time. You know, I was just thinking,
because I can't be the only one in the group that's played this and have a bad opinion of it, because then, you know, on our podcast, like, our universal opinion for now is going to be that it sucks.
I was just thinking, I don't think there's been a character, like a comic book character or pop culture character, that has had as much range as Batman. From like the super ultra camp, like, Adam West, Biff Pow, like super cheese, like hyper cheesy version from the 60s, to the crazy dark, like Frank Miller, you know, what's that line the Joker says? You're too young to be you're young enough to be the hero, or you live long enough to see yourself turn into the villain.
Mm. Yeah.
Like, I'm paraphrasing, but it's something along those lines. Like the Frank Miller Batman is like fucking dark, you know? So I don't know. I can't think of any other character that has in pop culture that has had that wide a swing.
That's true. I mean, it must have occurred for other things. What are the others?
Yeah, I don't think any of us are super comic book buffs. So,
well, it wouldn't have
to
be comic books. I'm just thinking like any kind of...
Oh, you mean any character?
Yeah. I don't know.
I don't know.
We'll think of one.
Yeah, or not.
Listeners, send us email.
Anyway, 5 years ago.
Call to action.
I am up to date now. Dark Knight is pretty good.
All right.
Wait, what's our email address? Since I just...
Yeah, you should watch it, Mike.
It's just mail@theescortmission.com.
Yes, right. Mail us to tell us other characters that are, like Charles said, or other
movies.
Or
whatever,
I should
or to
catch
tell us
on.
We suck or we rule. Just send us email, please. Sorry, I got desperate.
Also, after talking so much about Fez and playing a little bit more Fez and solving a couple more of the puzzles, but basically kind of giving up on Fez and then just talking about some of the solutions to the later puzzles instead of actually doing them. Mm-hmm. They really made me want to play Braid. It reminded me how awesome Braid was. And I kind of was missing the aspects of Braid that were better than Fez. And so I went back and I basically played Braid all the way through again.
Nice.
And then, similarly, it made me think of Portal. And my niece and nephew both just got iPads. My sister and brother-in-law basically bought two iPads for the family.
Wow,
you know,
nice.
One for her and my niece, and one for him and my nephew. Mm-hmm. Which is a brilliant idea, really. There's so many educational apps on that thing. That thing is so sweet. They showed me these handwriting apps and these different like math apps and stuff. All these basically games that are educational, like we used to play Math Blasters and stuff like that or something, except next-gen iPad Math Blasters. Those things rule. But my sister, ironically, was decrying video games in general as being useless and a waste of time. And I, you know, asked her opinion on, like, film or TV or books and, you know, like, basically compared the different media. And she had a much more negative opinion about video games than every other medium. Even though, ironically, she just made this leap and bought iPads basically for the educational video games, mm-hmm. right? And so it made me want to show her an adult, you know, video game that expands your mind, that kind of blows your mind. Mm-hmm. So I showed her Portal real quick. And one of the early puzzles where you have to look through a portal and anyway, you have to think about portals.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And open a door and shoot a portal there, etc. Think
with portals.
And she basically gave up very, very quickly, thinking, "I can't do this. Like, I can't think this hard. My mind is already blown, basically." And
that's too bad.
Well, it's not a bad thing, but I think she got the point. That's the point I wanted to make to her. Was that it is there. Is this potential for mind expansion?
So I had a similar experience just this weekend. I was, you know, went on a little mini vacation with my my parents and wife and son, and I was showing my mom Drop 7 on the iPhone, and she ended up playing it for like an hour and a half and really liking it, but she kept using, you know, phrases like, you know, oh, I don't like that I'm enjoy or getting I don't like to be achieving something at this stupid video game, right? And I said, you know, you probably wouldn't say something like that, you know, talking about crossword puzzle or Sudoku, right? She agreed that she wouldn't. I'm like, this is just, I mean, just because it can only be done on you know, on a computer or on with a screen doesn't necessarily mean that it can't be any more useful in sort of, you know, brain training or just making you think about, you know, the world in a different way, right? And but she had, you know, said a number of things along those lines, even though she was like very evidently enjoying the game and she played a lot of it. So
yeah, she was locked into that preconceived notion that video games are a waste of time, and it takes time to change fundamental opinions like that.
Yeah, or she could, you know. She's ashamed of enjoying it, even though she can't really deny that she's enjoying it.
I don't think she was ashamed of it. I think that she was, she wasn't experiencing shame per se. She just hadn't connected that she was enjoying a video game. Like, her brain was still on the video games are dumb and a waste of time, while like that was still it's cognitive dissonance, right? Like, mm-hmm. I don't like video games, you know what I mean? And yet I'm enjoying this thing. So it, like, I don't know, it must not be a video game or it's something else. Like, they were just divergent and she was on one path. Like, in reality, she's on one path enjoying a video game and getting something relevant out of it. And but, you know, her sort of self concept was on a different path. The, you know, video games are dumb and useless and a waste of time.
Old people. What are you going to do?
Basically, other than that, I played a bunch more Mass Effect 3 multiplayer.
That does not sound like you.
Got into the Geth Engineer this week. Man, the Geth Engineer rules. And the Asari Adept Justicar with the big ol' bubble. All right.
Wait, the big ol' bubble?
Yeah, big ol' bubble. It's like a 8... meter diameter.
Are these new characters from the
from the DLC?
Uh-huh.
An 8 meter diameter bubble that you drop that gives a buff for defense, like you take reduced damage any party members that are inside it,
mm-hmm.
and gives a debuff to enemies, so all enemies inside it take extra damage, that sort of thing. So you can spec it towards either offense or defense if you tend to drop it more often on your party or out in front of your party at choke points.
Cool.
It's pretty awesome.
Nice.
I don't need to bring up Fez. I don't have that much to say about Fez. So, Mike, bring up Fez.
Bring up Fez.
Let's talk about Fez. Let's talk about Fez.
All right. I want to leave that. All right. Yeah. Let's just get Fez out of the way. Actually, no. No. Screw you. I wanted to do just a couple news items first. So, RIP MCA. I want to get that out of the way. Uh-huh. Beastie Boys, Adam Yauch. Yeah. Died recently. That sucks. Elder Scrolls Online.
That sucks. That was the whole bullet.
Yeah, pretty much. I don't have anything deep to say. I like the Beastie Boys music. It sucks that one of them died, so that's probably going to change the
cancer
dynamic
sucks.
Of the group.
Cancer sucks.
Cancer sucks. Yeah. I mean, are you gonna like disagree with me? Is this going to turn into like an argument? No. I don't think so. All right. All right, Elder Scrolls Online. Got to get that out there. That's like probably the newest, biggest news that's item that's happening. So I'll just say, I like MMOs. I like the Bethesda single player thing, trying to put them together.
Do you like MMOs though?
I like the concept of MMOs, I guess.
Like if I say, hey Mike, there's this new sweet MMO, there's virtually no chance I'm gonna get you to play it. Like unless I do months of trying to convince you and I finally break down your willpower and then I give it to you or something. it's for free or I give you a copy.
Right, if it's free.
I can finally convince you to play an MMO sometimes.
Well, okay.
But you're very resistant to MMOs. I wouldn't say you like MMOs as much as you have liked some MMOs in the past.
Yeah, okay. So just because I don't currently play them and I'm not interested in them doesn't mean that I don't like them.
Okay.
So, but yeah, I think there's a bigger time in there's a bigger time investment with MMOs. Like to say that I'm going to play Mass Effect 3 means that I'm probably going to play it for a couple weeks and be done. Whereas an MMO, you know, could turn into like a habit.
It could, but you could also do the exact same thing. You could also play it for a couple weeks and drop it.
Yeah, I guess I don't think that it's worth getting into an MMO for a couple weeks. I don't know. I see them differently.
I
see one as a habit and one is like an event.
I don't mean to stick on this point for too long, but I actually find this really interesting. Why? Basically,
MMO, to hook you for a long time. It is not.
That's not necessarily the whole point. I mean, if you just played this game for some arbitrary MMO that just came out or whatever, and you played it for 2 weeks, you know, you played it for a total of maybe 30 or 40 hours or something like that. And you enjoyed that time, but you didn't enjoy it enough to want to keep playing after that period of time or to pay the subscription at the end of the month to basically play it for 1 month. It isn't the end result very, very similar to playing a single-player RPG? I mean, you pay a little bit of money. You play for a similar number of hours. You play in a similar time period, like maybe for a month. And then you're kind of done and you quit. And it doesn't. Does it really matter whether or not you got to the credits or not?
What I think is different is that you have to deal with all the MMO bullshit, the super crappy, not very interesting quests.
So what's the MMO?
Charles is saying that he doesn't like MMOs because that's what you're... Yeah. I'm saying that maybe I don't necessarily agree that the trappings of an MMO are what would cause me to not start one. But I will agree that in general, I like a well-developed single-player experience more than the general MMO trappings. Like, I think I do get tired of them faster, and I'm more skeptical of them. Thus, I'm skeptical of Elder Scrolls Online, not only because of that, but because of what the Elder Scrolls has been up until now, has been this, like, gripping single-player, you're a lone adventure in a world doing deeds.
I don't see it that way.
Throwing, you know, 100 other people also maybe doing that same quest as you at the same time. Like, well, okay, there's already the complaint that, you know, even though you get to level 100 bazillion and you've done all the quests and you're a member of every brotherhood and you're the badass, you still talk to someone and they act like you've done nothing, you know, because they don't really go that far in the world building. Well, put that and then multiply that by the 100 other people that are doing that same quest as you in the same spot, it kind of cheapens your accomplishments even more, you know? That is a fundamental issue I have with MMOs that has been gained over time and realizing that I want more out of my experience than the cheapening of a quest that that 500 other people have already done and that 20 people are currently doing with me right now, which... You know, I don't know. I feel like this is a bigger topic that we could go on forever, but that's my general feeling. So I'm skeptical of Elder Scrolls Online. I'm curious to see how it works, but I'm not sure it's the right direction. It may be the only direction financially that they feel they can go in at this point. Maybe
I think those games are still selling well.
True, like, but you also have to look at World of Warcraft and how it's been out for 8 years and been like destroying, not destroying, but holding its own,
yeah.
Which is kind of fantastic, like in terms of
MMOs. Well, obviously, basically, but there have been a million other MMOs that have come in after that and tried to like get all the lessons they could from WoW and still haven't been successful.
Right. So Elder Scrolls has a tough hill to climb, yes. Which is, you know.
Basically, WoW made so much money that everyone else in the gaming business is a little jealous and wants a piece of that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So everyone wants to try it.
Hence the Old Republic, et cetera, et cetera.
But, right. Mike, you touched on several issues.
Right.
But, you know,
I'm not sure I want to follow up.
It could be
on
a rabbit hole, but I do want to just, you know, maybe bring up one or two before
you
we
see
move
my
on.
List of things I want to talk about.
Well, you can't say something like that and not expect me to respond.
Josh, you suck. No, moving on. Totally moving on.
So,
you're not hosting.
Your response
the show right
is not
now.
On my list.
I didn't allot for that. I'm sorry.
So, in the Elder Scrolls games, Skyrim, in my opinion, went like way too far in the direction of trying really hard to make what you're doing feel epic, to make you the hero of the world. Basically, every quest in Skyrim or every quest line ends in you becoming the master of that group and just dominating, like the mage guild. Somehow mm-hmm. You're this novice, and then excuse me, and then you. Like an hour later,
again
you sneeze.
I don't know where that came from. Yeah, cough button. An hour later, you're like in charge of the mages' college.
It's not an hour later.
It's very, very quick.
It's not an hour later. It's the end of the quest line. You become archmage.
I know, but it's like a bit unrealistic. It like okay, 5 minutes in, you're this complete novice.
Yeah.
5 minutes in, they send you on this epic quest to go down in this cave to retrieve this artifact that seems really important. Like they could have, like, it just. It escalates so quickly yeah. and unrealistically, yeah. and that's kind of the same case for almost every quest line in Skyrim. Mm-hmm. They make it escalate so quickly, and then you end up leading everything. And
so you're basically arguing for go kill five sewer rats.
Well, what I'm arguing is that in some of the previous Elder Scrolls, or in other games in general, what can be done is to tell a very personal story where you have a very critical role in that story. And even if it's a bit part, even if you're not like the king of the world at the end of the story, it's still a super awesome story, uh-huh. right? It has a really strong emotional arc. And it, you know, is more believable storytelling is basically what I'm saying.
Yeah. Like, I agree with that.
Not every, I think they tried too hard. And mm-hmm. You didn't play Skyrim, did you, Mike?
No.
I think you might have a similar opinion after you played Skyrim. You might see my point. Like, a lot of people, I think, might agree that even though Skyrim was better mechanically in a lot of ways than previous Elder Scrolls, like, it did that thing wrong. It tried too hard to be too epic. And if they can tell a more personal story in an MMO, like I think Star Wars does really well, you know, with all these different classes, you have your own little personal story where you do something really cool and you're not necessarily king of the universe at the end. You know, those stories work really well, even in a giant multiplayer setting. So it's hard to do, but it can be done.
Yeah. I mean, I'll agree. I didn't play Star Wars, so I can't say whether that did it as well as you said it did, but it may have. So I think we have to table this because, yeah, I don't play a lot of MMOs lately. So I'm not really qualified to say a lot about it. But anyway, so follow up on Tetris last week, mm-hmm. there's an interesting test that the British Psychology Society did, which sounds kind of made up, where they...
BPS, yeah.
Right. so they basically did a test or an experiment or something where they tried to use video games, specifically Tetris, at least as one of them, to help PTSD sufferers, huh. and how essentially, you know, focusing your mind on a task like Tetris helps stave off, you know, recurrences or flare-ups of PTSD. So I thought that was an interesting dimension of
yet another reason why
Tetris
it's the best game ever.
Pretty sweetness-itude. Also, speaking of tests, Charles brought up, I'm not sure if you brought it up in the podcast or if you brought it up afterward. That
I did bring it up, but I didn't know the name of it when I did.
The Bartle Gamer Psychology Test.
Yes, that's what I was referencing when I talked about the four types of gamers, which are achievers, killers, explorers, and socializers.
Right. So I took it, and I know Josh took it, and I assume Charles took mm-hmm. it, and we all got explorer, I think, mainly explorer. Now, that's great and all. But as I was taking it, I was kind of feeling similarly to Josh that that it was kind of bullshit.
It's really more interesting in concept, yeah. I think. I think in theory, a test could be done that could evaluate your motivations when playing games a bit more accurately. But the test is written as if you are a heavy MUD player in the 90s.
Right.
Or something like that.
Which is when it was written.
Yeah. And so it's
yeah,
dated.
So I'm sure it had its place. But none of us, I don't think, played any MUDs ever.
Yeah.
Right. And we do have varying degrees of MMO experience. I'm not sure Charles has played any.
I have never played an MMO.
Okay.
So. And Mike, you've played a few, and I've played a bunch. A lot.
Yeah.
But... Yeah, so basically all these questions are really, really specific. Like, in a MUD, right.
A MUD.
Yeah. Do you enjoy knowing where everything is or having the best equipment or something like that?
Yeah,
but they even get more specific. Like, would you spend more time worrying about being killed by other players or imagining or looking for a fight to go kill other players? So they're assuming you're on a PvP server,
right?
And you know, all these little details that are very, very specific to the scenario that kind of weigh the questions, that load the questions in one direction.
Very loaded, redundant, like the same question asked five different ways. It just,
so what I think you're objecting to there is survey design.
Like, yeah, no, I am.
Yes. That is,
I think, personality
surveys
are kind of annoying to take.
Maybe they're annoying to take, but like you have to, in order to smooth out variations in response due to the way you word a question, you have to ask the same question multiple times in multiple ways, right? You're trying to, like, that's just how you write a scientific survey when you're trying to get accurate information. So maybe it's like annoying, but I don't think you can fault the test for that.
I guess I can fault general survey test design then for being annoying. Yes.
You just want something that knows what you're like.
Well,
you're on a tricorder.
Well, I want something that will ask me a question about a specific thing, get my answer, and then move on to a different thing.
But
not
that's
ask
inaccurate.
Me again. How is that inaccurate?
Because
like, do you like cake? Yes, I like cake. Do you like baked goods that are rounded and, you know, filled with, you know, I don't, it's just,
when you're trying
yes,
to
like
arrive
cake.
At whether or not somebody likes cake, you can ask do you like cake? When you're trying to arrive at whether or not somebody tends to value exploration in a game over, attacking other players, right? You have to ask that in multiple ways. And even, you know, obviously if you're trying to get a large sample size, you have to ask it in lots of different ways. But even if you're asking just one person and they're trying hard to take the test legitimately and not overthink it or whatever, you're still going to be influenced by the way the question is written. Maybe the person who is writing the question uses a word in a slightly different sense than you do. And so you answer, you're not sure what they were asking, or you think they're asking one thing and they're asking a different thing and you answer it in a different way. That's just how you have to write surveys, right? You have to smooth out those variations.
And in theory, I'm sure you're right, and maybe it's just this test, but I felt like it was basically insulting my intelligence. Like, I didn't have to think too hard about the difference between question one and question two and how they were essentially asking me the same thing,
mm-hmm.
and so was question three, and so was question four. And I'm like, I get it. You're asking me whether I care about having, like, a high-level character or something. Like, I get it. By the third question, I'm kind of getting a little infuriated by the test. I'm starting to, like, not care about my answers. I'm starting to invalidate, like, their, not professionalism, but just their legitimacy as a test. Like, you're wasting my time. You're insulting my intelligence. Like, just fucking take my answer and let's move on to the thing. I don't know. It could just been to this one. This one might have been a little too obvious about the fact that it was doing that. Like, if it were good, I don't think I would have noticed and it wouldn't have bothered me, but I noticed like the first time it did it and I'm just like, and then it kept doing it and it kept doing it. It felt like seven questions asked five different times. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, you know, maybe it's just me. I'm just sensitive to it. But anyway, moving on. I don't think we should spend a lot of time on that. Back to games, though. So some of the games I did play. Yes, Fez. All right, I'll bring up Fez. Mm-hmm. So I beat, quote unquote, Fez, meaning I solved all the puzzles that are known to exist in the game, and everything's gold, and I have like a 206.4% completion, which is, I don't know what's up with that. Like,
did you get all the pink things too?
Pink things?
The hard pieces.
Yes. I got all the hard pieces. I got all the cubes, all the artifacts. You got what there is to get. All the map. All the things that have a hole that need to be filled, I have filled. And the last two puzzles, just without spoiling, the riddle puzzle and the obelisk puzzle, which anybody who plays Fez will know what that means. I cheated on both of them, meaning I looked them up online. I did try to solve the riddle puzzle, and I didn't get anywhere. And I didn't really try the obelisk puzzle. The riddle puzzle, once I knew the answer, I was a little mad at myself because I think I could have spent more time and I could have figured it out. It seemed somewhat reasonable. The obelisk puzzle, no one knows why the answer is what it is. It has literally only been cracked through brute force on the internet. So whether, you know, the creator is going to add a patch and make it easier to figure that out, or more people are going to spend more time to figure it out, I don't know. But at this point, you know, it's like the unsolved puzzle, like in terms of solving it the way the game would have you solve it rather than brute forcing it. So that was a little disappointing. Didn't really change the ending. It just kind of was there. It wasn't even an achievement, like Xbox achievement. So it's just kind of like, you know, if you want to spend the time on this, that's
cool. You get
cool.
An achievement for 100%, don't you?
That's just the cubes, though. But you, for the heart pieces, you don't get an achievement for those.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So,
do you have all the achievements?
I have all the achievements, yeah. But I got all the achievements before I even solved all the puzzles.
Is it 400 right. points now?
I think it's 1,200?
No. Not points to purchase it. Achievement points.
Oh, I don't remember how many achievement points is, but whatever, I have the max. So, but I love the game, despite that. It didn't really sour me on the game. I think it's pretty brilliant. It's definitely old school in its like puzzle design. It really requires you to take notes like a mist and think about it. Some people are not really big on that, so they could be soured on it because they don't really want to do that work.
I think, you know? That's people who weren't used to gaming that way.
Yeah.
Like, we all grew up with games where you had to do that.
And that's why when...
It's really a throwback.
When we first talked about Fez, the thing that came to mind was that it's the game your five-year-old self has been waiting 25 years to play. Like, it's... This is that game that would have existed had Phil Fish been making games and the Xbox existed then, you know? But, I don't know, Charles. I mean, even though you didn't necessarily solve all the puzzles, let's just say you're done with it. I mean, are you still satisfied with playing it? Do you think it was still good?
Oh, yeah. No, I loved it. I loved it. And I think we basically had the same path through the game. I cheated on the solution to the... So I solved the Tetris puzzle myself. The kind of... There are three main crypto things. Solved the Tetris puzzle by myself. Got the location... Or the broad location for the
alphabet
Rosetta Stone yeah. for the alphabet on the internet, but went and looked around in that location and figured out what it was, and then was able to translate stuff. And then Mike, you and I had a cool day there where we were going back and forth on IM and figuring out the number puzzle,
right?
Eventually looked up. Eventually looked up or I just had you tell me before we started podcasting the answer to the riddle, because basically I've been thinking about the riddle since before our last podcast last week and just wasn't coming up with anything. Actually, I got surprisingly close. Mm-hmm. One of the answers that I came up with was sort of on the right track, but even so, I don't think there was any way that I would have come up with the answer. But besides that one and the obelisk, which are just, which have just, you know, whatever, the obelisk, literally there's, as far as we know from reading the internet, there is no way to answer it other than, you know, some guy just happened to enter in this random string and it worked. Other than those two, everything else was basically very solvable in the game. You know, a couple of things we took, you know, kind of brute force approaches to, just like, okay, there are, you know, four possibilities here, or there are like four things and you have to do it in the right sequence, so that's 24 combinations. Do it, eventually you'll get the right one. And, you know, maybe there were, you know, more elegant ways to solve those, but you know, I was still able to do it, and I found the game to be very satisfying and really gave you that thrill of discovery when you figured something out, you know.
Yeah, and I'm not even disappointed about going on the internet. It was actually really satisfying to see what other people were doing. Like, I almost feel like the game was made, you know, obviously in this day and age of the internet, of collaboration. I think it's awesome that the internet collaborated on the final puzzle. Like, how many games do you really hear that people band together about that?
How exactly did they collaborate?
Well, they basically made, I think, like a spreadsheet of all the possible combinations, and they divvied up like the workforce.
They divvied up the brute force?
Yeah.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
But the fact that they even came together to say, okay, we want to solve this. This is the only way we know how. Let's do it. Is kind of cool. And it you know, and there's conspiracy theory, not conspiracy, but there's theories about stuff in the game and the backstory. And, you know, a lot of this game is the community. It's not playing the game in a vacuum is not the ultimate fun. It's talking about it with other people and getting their input on it.
Another communal aspect was the translation, right? The instant that I got through and was able to translate things, I went and I translated the riddle puzzle, and then everything else I just looked up on the internet, right? Because there's no particular point to doing it. And there had been a group of people who said, okay, you take this section, you take this section, you take this section, we'll all translate everything in those sections, bring it together, and then we'll have everything translated in the game. And I think that this game really benefited from being able to do that. And I think that Fish actually sort of encouraged that with a couple of the game design decisions, like the use of the QR codes is explicitly a meta element, right? Like, you have to do something outside of the game in order to be able to use those. Also, there's one of the anti-cubes you get by looking at the Xbox Live achievements, right? And there's an achievement listing that has the trigger code that you use to get it in the game. So he's playing with those elements of inside the game, outside the game. And so I think that, you know, I don't think that he would say you're playing it wrong if you're using the help of others from outside the game.
Which is interesting, because that seems in direct opposition to Jonathan Blow and Braid, because he was very particular about don't go to the internet, don't cheat, figure it out on yourself, you'll feel much better about it. Which, you know, I'm not really sure if one person is right or one person is wrong. It's just a matter of opinion. You know,
I am.
And okay, but I don't think it ruined my experience of Fez to go online after I gave it enough of a shot that I felt that, okay, I'm okay now with finding out what other people have said about this, you know. And sure, maybe I would have felt a little more happiness if I would have figured it out, because there were moments in the game where I did figure the puzzle out and it was bitching. I was like, holy shit, I didn't see that before. Oh my god, does that mean something? Oh my god, I unlocked something, you know. That was awesome. But it doesn't necessarily mean that if I don't solve the whole game that way, that it was a pointless exercise or
really
something.
Really, we solved the game. We solved like 90, other than those two puzzles, we basically figured everything out in game.
And one of them is ostensibly not even solvable through the game, which I will admit is kind of lame. Like, I want the whole game to be solvable through
maybe
means
it is,
of the game. But maybe we just don't know it. That's the thing. I can't say for sure that it's only brute force.
What were you about to say, Josh?
Yes.
I love the game. I don't want to anything I say negative about it doesn't really change the fact that I recommend it. I really enjoyed it. But basically, I mean, it's a couple games in one. It's this platformer that's really fun, and then that gets harder, and that's cool. And it's like a Metroidvania almost. But then it has puzzles that vary in difficulty, but vary in like style. And all the early puzzles or the easier puzzles, I like the style. But at some point, near, you know, after 100%, but before 200%, the puzzle design, I don't think, is really that good objectively. Like, it's, or at least my style.
Like, which ones are you thinking of?
Subjectively is what I meant. It's, they're not, I like puzzles where I can look at what's on the screen, maybe walk left and right, back and forth, maybe look at something I have written down that was obvious that I needed to write it down, and think about it and figure it out. Mm-hmm. I don't like puzzles where I have to backtrack across the map to these rooms that were gold and marked as completed, mm-hmm. and spend a lot of time looking like at the entire map over again. Like, or you're in a room and you're like, I don't even know what the goal is here. I'm just staring at this room and I have to figure out something. I have to figure out what the puzzle is before I even figure out like how to go about solving the puzzle. And then I have no idea if I've made any progress towards solving it, you know? And I have no idea if it's even solvable with the information I have right now, or whether I'm wasting my time and I should give up and come back later. You know, I think that Jonathan Blow, for example, in Braid, you know, made this almost perfectly crafted puzzle game where all the information you need in order to solve any of the puzzles was basically given to you at, in the immediate previous puzzles, or in a puzzle you did a few puzzles ago. You know, he keeps layering and layering one little thing you should learn on top of the next little thing you should learn, and then now you have to combine all these things you learned to solve this next one, and then you have to make one little leap after that to solve the next one. It's such brilliant design. Every puzzle in that game can be beaten without any, you know, reference to the internet or research or help or whatever, if you just, you know, think about it hard enough and just continue. And Fez is like the opposite with all its in-game hard puzzles. So specifically, I think the letter code mm-hmm. is kind of BS. The only way to figure out the letter code, the you know, the alphabet, mm-hmm. is for someone to tell you exactly the room to look in for, you know, that has the quote Rosetta Stone.
No,
or I think that's basically the only way to figure it out.
Somebody told me it was in the forest. That's what I looked up.
Yeah, they told you where it was.
Well, that's like 12 different rooms.
I know, but it's not like 500 different rooms, right? A normal person playing the game without researching on the internet or asking someone for a hint is going to be like, well, how do I solve this? And they're going to get a certain...
Truthfully, that's only because you're not looking hard enough when you play the game the first time.
Yeah, and that's a problem, too.
You're not paying attention enough.
That's a problem, too, okay? Because when you first start the game... You don't know what you need to pay attention to, mm-hmm. right? It didn't teach you what you needed to pay attention to. Mm-hmm. And games that teach you what you need to pay attention to in order to solve things, like, I think that's good design or helpful design.
Yeah.
And I understand it's helpful. You might think that being more obtuse or being less helpful is, you know, makes the puzzle harder and therefore is an advantage. But I disagree. I like puzzles that are hard because you have to think about them really hard. I don't like puzzles that are hard because of these superficial impediments. Like you have to grind through every room in the whole game over again, staring at, you know, all four sides or even deeper than that of every screen and the whole game to like try to find clues towards these
that one
hard in-game puzzles.
Pretty unfair.
Yeah, I think that one's totally unfair.
That one in particular felt unfair.
If someone told me that exact room to look in, maybe I could have figured that out.
I think the numbers one, on the other hand, I really liked the way that one was structured, because that's the one that Mike and I had this afternoon going back and forth on IM, like, you know, working it out and like, okay, well, we know this from this screen and we know this from this screen, and, you know, in this room it says this on the wall, and you know, we pieced together things from all over the game, but it was all structured kind of around the rooms that we were still in and using. It wasn't something that had been marked as complete, and we had to, you know, it was fun to kind of piece things together from all over this huge world and, you know, eventually arrive at an answer. Like, oh, we know that 1, 2, 3, and 4 are these, and that means that that's vastly reduced the number of brute force options for this room, which means that now that room is actually achievable in a reasonable amount of time, right? And then, okay, we can do that, and then that'll give us the answer for these equations, and, you know, you're kind of building and building. So that one was different, but I do agree that the alphabet, like, knowing where that was Like, I had to look it up. I had to go at least as far as, like, it's in the forest.
So I totally understand that that could be fun for you and a lot of people on the internet. Just like it can be fun for somebody to watch that 600 hours of that weird
right.
live show that you were talking about the other week. Just like it can be fun for folks to, you know, translate ancient Aramaic, mm-hmm. you know, tomes.
Basically.
You know, like, if that's your thing, cool. That's not my thing. I don't want to have to, like, dig through all these random screenshots I took of all these random rooms and try to figure out what's relevant to what. I'd rather be handed, okay, this is relevant to this puzzle. Figure it out. Mm-hmm. And in that situation where I got a couple hints and then I saw, like, what I needed to figure out for the number mm-hmm. system, mm-hmm. I figured out the number system and that was cool. But I didn't like the fact... I thought the number system wasn't quite as bad as the alphabet, but it was bad in the sense that you don't know, you know, where to go to find what you need to find to figure it out, and then where to go to use that. You have to backtrack so much, take pictures of everything, take notes everywhere, and then try to piece all this different stuff together.
The first place you need to go is the schoolhouse, right? Like, that's not, that's something that you could be expected to think of.
No, I understand. Right? That wasn't, like, yeah. as obtuse.
Yeah.
As the alphabet, which was completely obtuse.
Yeah.
You know,
the alphabet is very cute, but he sort of fell in love with himself.
So, you know,
like, how cute he was being.
From that one shot in the schoolhouse, like, you know, I figured out a decent amount. But then to, like, figure out which rooms I needed to go back to that I hadn't solved yet to try to use that number system mm-hmm. to figure out the puzzles there, I don't even have the effort. I don't want to do it. So I'm staying at, like, 130% or something. And just talking about the rest of the puzzles. The
numbers, you don't really solve that much with the numbers.
There's a couple puzzles that you solve with the numbers, and...
It's like two.
Yeah, well, I'm not really sure you solve much...
The bell.
With the letters, except the riddle. Other That's like the only time I really use the letter. Otherwise, I did translate a few things just for fun, but then you realize it's not really helpful, and
they're
just kind of fun.
They're just fun, yeah. That's why I just started
looking
it up.
It's a world-building thing. Like, if you know, like in Myst or Riven, you can learn a language. I know, because I was talking to my wife about it when I was talking about the numbers, that she was thinking about how you learn the numbering system in Riven, and she was showing, like, what it was and how the symbols actually kind of matched and had a slightly more logical design. I must say that the design mm-hmm. of both the letters and the numbers, well, the letters not so much, but they don't really have a strong connection to the number system and alphabet system that we use uh-huh. in English. So it is pretty damn alien. Like, it's not like the one in Fez necessarily looks anything like a one.
Yeah.
And so it's pretty damn alien. And I totally think that all your points are valid, Josh. I know it can be tedious, and I'm not really sure why I found it really fun to take two pages front and back of notes on this game. It's just, it's a vibe. I fell in love with it, and I just did whatever it took to beat those puzzles. It wasn't like I was kind of on the fence about the game, and then I got to, like, the alphabet, and I'm like, oh, what? And then said, screw you, and stopped, which is more of your reaction to the game. You weren't in love with it. You were like, this is cool. Oh, this is bullshit. I'm out.
And then both of you had the social aspect working on it together, and then going on the internet and finding some information to help you.
Right.
And in general, when I approach a puzzle, like, I usually want to, I consider going anywhere for anything cheating, and I try to completely avoid, you know, any information from the internet, etc. Yeah. Until I basically give up. If I have to even have one piece of information, like what room to go in, mm-hmm. I consider that basically cheating, and I try not to do that at all costs. And I consider myself done with the game at the point that I have to do that. So that's another just like a personal mental issue.
Yeah. But anyway, you should play Fez. Fez is good. I know I've been going long, but I did want to mention I did kind of my 5-minute Xbox Live demo thing.
Demo hunt.
Like earlier this week, where I played a bunch of demos, and I just have a very few short things to say about them. So I played this game called Warp, where you're essentially this little alien and you break out of a lab and you have the ability to warp, like, through certain points and go through certain rooms. And, you know, I played it for a couple minutes and I thought it was cute and interesting. but I don't really, I don't know. I won't buy it. I won't play it anymore. But it was interesting. I don't know. That's Warp.
Just bring up the ones worth bringing up.
So I Am Alive. All right. I did play a good portion of I Am Alive, which is, I'm trying to think how to describe it. It is kind of like a, you know, post-apocalyptic, something horrible happened to the world, and yeah. you're a sole survivor. You're going back to, like, your hometown, and there's wreckage, and there's... You know, people are attacking you, and what was really the most interesting thing about it that I liked was the stamina mechanic, where there's a lot of climbing initially. Like, you're going across a bridge that's, like, broken in many pieces, and you climb up, and you have to, like, shimmy across things, like kind of Metal Gear Solid style, or lots of third-person action games, and you can sort of do like a.
You lose a stamina meter as you go along.
Right.
And then at the very end...
You start to, like, you know you're going to drop, but you can do sort of like a last-ditch, like, power yeah. effort to, like, jump up to that last rung, and, man, the tension you feel
but
is
doing that
pretty palpable.
You to permanently lose
right.
part of your stamina
you
bar.
Do, and you have to use, like, a potion or something to get it back, which is, yeah.
Ultra rare.
I really like the strategy there. And then once you get across the bridge, it kind of becomes more of like a, I can't think of a game that it's like, but
it's a survival. It's like a survival horror game without the horror. There's not, yeah. there aren't supernatural monsters. The scary part is the suspense. And like all the resources are incredibly scarce. Like you like never have, most of the time you have one bullet for your gun, if any.
Right.
It's well, like yeah. a lower budget Fallout.
It's not like Fallout.
It's not
at
like Fallout at
all.
No,
at all.
It has a similar.
Other than in the setting,
but it's not like Fallout at all. No.
I think it is. I mean, it's
Fallout doesn't have a jumping, climbing.
No, beyond the climbing, like you said, beyond the climbing, it's a survival horror-ish, like limited resource. You know, find and save your bullets. Interact with these post-apocalyptic, like people that are threatening you. Basically, anyone you encounter is probably. You know, just wants to kill you and steal your bullets.
It's not an RPG, though.
So?
Like, you don't have stats.
And it's not really...
That's a large portion of what makes Fallout.
Well...
And Fallout's not really, like, a Resident Evil limited resource game. There's a lot of resources in that game. I never really worried about running out of stuff. It was more about realizing a character in a world. Whereas this is a game where you have a specific character you're playing.
All right, Resident Evil, Fallout, Tomb Raider...
Yeah, but it's all of those.
It's a textbook case of an overambitious concept for the budget. You know, for a $15 DLC
Xbox Live
arcade game, mm-hmm. it tries to do way too much, and then it's just the control and stuff is too janky because they just didn't spend enough time getting it right. The balance and the testing probably is all. Messed up. I would assume because of the budget. Mm-hmm. It tries really hard. It does some things that are unique. The climbing stamina mechanic that you described is like directly out of Shadow of the Colossus.
Mm-hmm.
It's brilliantly done in Shadow. And surprisingly, Tomb Raider and Uncharted have never implemented that, which is really baffling because the Uncharted climbing sequences I actually find pretty boring. And I don't think those games are as good as well as they're reviewed because, yeah, that you just hold up an A, basically. Like, you just...
Yeah.
You're climbing everywhere and there's no tension at all.
Yeah.
And there's no difficulty at all because it's almost impossible to fall or fail jumps. Anytime you fail a jump in Uncharted, you basically get angry at the game design. Like, oh, they shouldn't have let me fall there because they do... Like, make you virtually invulnerable to falls everywhere else in the game.
Mm-hmm.
It's really funny. So, yeah, if Tomb Raider or Uncharted implemented that stamina mechanic exactly taken out of I Am Alive, they'd be hugely improved.
Interesting. So one of the cool things that I Am Alive does is the combat.
Combat is also kind of unique, yes.
Very interesting. I think it's pretty... They tried to make it kind of realistic, right? Like... Very limited resources, like fighting people is really something you want to do only as a last resort. If there's even one other person involved in the fight, like you're pretty much fucked. You really have to be careful, as it is like in an actual street fight, right?
That we have all been in and right, know from yeah. experience.
Well, they very quickly give you unavoidable fights.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. That's true.
But and that's part of a tutorial, really, because it's kind of like flashing, a guy is attacking you, you should press this button. You know, it's kind of like teaching you.
The mechanics that I'm interested in are the... So not that you could avoid, what you're talking about is that there are fights that are unavoidable. Yeah, but the point is, like, a fight should be really scary, right? A fight to the death should be a scary thing that you don't want to take place. And I think they get that sense across. And what I liked in particular was the mechanic of holding a gun out, like menacing somebody with a gun that they may or may not know whether it's loaded. Like, nobody knows how much ammo anybody has at any given time and that stuff. I found that pretty interesting. So I think
that's true. As you that's say, a really Josh, smart mechanic.
They're doing some cool things, and they had a lot of really great ambition. And maybe their budget, or for whatever reason, just doesn't live up to all of those. But it's an interesting.
Yeah, the piece mind of work. The minds behind that game and some of its ideas are brilliant.
Yeah,
but they just didn't have enough resources or something to implement it perfectly.
I also played a cool shooter. Going back, a side-scrolling shooter game called Cynamora, which had a really, really cool graphical style. And, I mean, I'm not really sure it was a revolutionary shooter, but I haven't really played like a left-right, you know, Gradius-style shooter in a while. Kind of bullet hell, but not really. I mean, you know, unfortunately, Ikaruga really has ruined me for pretty much every shooter ever, because that game is pretty damn perfect. But the graphical style, cool, just, I don't know, it's really interesting. I also played Skullgirls, which is I put down in parentheses, Riddick fighter. Now, this could just be me not really playing fighting games in the last, you know, since I got Street Fighter II for my Super Nintendo in 95. But I played one match in that game, and I don't know what happened. Honestly, I'm not sure what occurred, but I lost. And I think I hit some things, and other things hit me. And people tagged
is it like
in
Marvel
and out.
Versus Capcom?
It's exactly like Marvel versus Capcom, only with like animated, you know, anime booby like character weirdness. But
that is where modern 2D fighters have gone.
Have you seen Blaze Blue?
That's what happens.
I have not. No.
Similar, like total
like
wackiness.
Like what happened, man? It's like they basically just kept going to 11 and then passed just it and don't know how to go back.
Absurd chaos nonstop. Yeah.
Yep. Well, they kind of have pulled back from that now. Like the most recent ones, Street Fighter 4 and Street Fighter Cross Tekken, have pulled back into a, you know, a slower pace. They do still have like the tag in tag out mechanic, but that's not like, you know, somebody hits you with an uppercut that knocks you up 12 screens, and then they fly up behind you and do an air juggle all the way back down and all that that craziness.
I had some other games, but I'm done. Let's move on.
All right, Nintendo.
Nintendo. What's I love Nintendo.
Main topic, Nintendo. Charles, give us some business updates.
Give us more of the business.
Nintendo. So we wanted to talk about Nintendo because they... you know, kind of for a long time, they've been going a path that hasn't necessarily agreed with the hardcore gamer, quote-unquote, whatever that means. Like,
yeah, I mean, well, what do you mean when you say that? I'm curious. Right, like, what do you
forget,
think of?
Forget I said hardcore. That's totally a can of worms that we should maybe talk about at a different time. But just...
the word we all understand but don't really want to define.
Core.
Okay, maybe it's valuable to talk about.
I think
it is. Let's let that in. But they have... they've been going down this path that not everyone has agreed with, not all of their previous, you know, most diehard fans have agreed with. And they are at a point now where they just reported their 2011 earnings, and they had a $458 million loss on $8 billion of revenue, which is pretty fucking incredible when you think about, like, a company that makes things that made $8 billion and still lost half a billion. Like, it's amazing that you can make $8 billion and still lose money. But anyway.
Well, that's like losing barely any money at that point.
Yeah, it's a significant percentage, right? But it's half of, what's half of eight? Is that 20%?
It's something like 5, isn't it? 5, like 5%?
Is it 5? Half of whatever.
Well, 10% of 8 billion would be
800,000.
800 million.
So it's less than 10%.
So it's like 400 million, right? Yeah. So it's like 5%.
Yeah, okay, yeah. It's still pretty crazy balls. Anyway. They're losing money on every 3DS they sell after having to drop the price and to, what is it, $170 now from $250. And The other kind of factoids, the U.S. sales are down 46%. Japanese sales are down 12%. So generally speaking, they just had a bad year. Their projections are that they're going to make $10 billion next year on the release of the Wii U, their new console.
Wii U.
So that's just kind of where they stand as a company from a fiscal perspective. I think it's one of the first, it's the first time in my memory that they've lost money. So I think that's probably pretty scary. And I don't know if that means that they're going to have any shakeups management wise, but, you know, I guess where I'm for a long time, Nintendo has been, they did something that was brilliant, which was we're never going to lose money on consoles, right? They just decided we're going to accept that we might have, you know, lower grade hardware, and we're going to try to innovate in other ways with, you know, we're going to have two screens on our handheld device, or we're going to use this cool motion tracking wand on our new console, and that's going to be our tactic to stay relevant, which I was really excited about. I actually, you know, I bought, the Wii was actually the first console I ever bought on launch day. Right, I was super stoked on the Wii. I thought it was going to be very interesting what developers did with that technology. And I guess, I mean, it basically delivered what they said they were going to deliver, but it never, it was disappointing to me personally. I never got what I wanted to out of the Wii. I never got like this transcendental, like a totally new and different way to play games that I thought it would deliver.
Well, a couple of the very, very late games that have come out in the last year, folks have said really implement the Wii controller concepts like they ideally would have in the first year of release of the console. You know, they didn't actually reach that point where they had great control with that thing that was unique, right, that one-to-one, and useful,
yeah.
You know, until... recently, Zelda is one of those games that people reference, which it's first arguable because I played that Zelda a little bit and I wasn't crazy about it. For mostly other reasons, though, the motion control in it might, you know, did seem pretty well implemented, and I could see the argument that if more games had done that sort of thing from the beginning, it might have had more success.
They weren't capable of doing that,
but there is
that,
potential,
right?
To take the lessons they learned there, and because the Wiimotes are going to work on their next console, for, you know, for developers to continue to use those concepts,
yeah,
with the next on the Wii U. So we'll see what happens there.
Do you feel like they deliver? I mean, Nintendo first party games, I've said this before on the show, are usually very good, and their third party support is like almost non-existent, right? I mean, that's got to be a key problem.
Well, and I'm not sure it was always that way.
Definitely wasn't that way.
Well, no, I mean, yeah, their first party stuff has always been good, but I think they had good third party support when they first started out. Because, you know, when I think of Nintendo, you know, I think of like the mid to late 80s and getting my Nintendo when I was like 5 and playing Super Mario Brothers and Legend of Zelda for like, you know, 6 hours Christmas morning and being like, video games, yes, you know, like,
yeah.
And but the thing is, at the time, Nintendo was synonymous with video games. Like, you didn't really, you know, no matter what you had, you just said, oh, I want a Nintendo. I'm playing the Nintendo. Oh, the kids are playing the Nintendo. Whether they were playing a Nintendo or not, whether they're playing the Nintendo or Sega Genesis, Sega Master System, or Game Boy, or whatever, it didn't matter.
Super Nintendo.
Yeah, Super Nintendo. Like, Nintendo was just video games.
Right, it was, and Kleenex.
Yeah, it was. It was Kleenex. It was Post-it notes. It was Xerox, you know, Xerox machine. And they didn't really have the kind of competition that they have, that has sprung up in the past, you know, I don't know, 10 or so years. With Sony, you know, I'm not sure if anybody really thought the PlayStation was going to come out and, like, rule the day. But I remember when I heard that Final Fantasy VII was not going to be on the Super Nintendo, or was not going to be on Nintendo's, you know, in their realm anymore, and it was going to go on Sony's platform. And I was like, crap, I really like Final Fantasy. Nintendo and Final Fantasy were like, they had this marriage, like they were together forever. Yeah. And then they lost that because they decided to not go, I think, with their N64 CD technology. They stayed with cartridges.
Right.
And they, Square Enix need, you know, wanted the orchestral music and the crazy FMV, and they needed CD-ROM technology.
Well, isn't that what, I don't know the exact history, but I think that's what became the PlayStation.
Right, they were working
Sony
on a joint.
Sony was working on the thing that was going to become the CD player for the N64.
Right, and I don't remember exactly how that broke down, but it did, and then they kind of went and made their own machine.
Like, okay, we'll just make this our own console.
Right, and I really feel like that was the beginning of, like, kind of the end of the golden age of Nintendo, or the you know, the beginning of the end, because I remember getting a PlayStation, you know, in, you know, whenever it came out, and playing Final Fantasy VII and being like, holy crap, this is insanely awesome. Yeah. And from there on out, I think I probably just stopped. Like, I didn't buy an N64. I didn't buy a GameCube. You know, I bought a Wii eventually, but there was this gap of time where I kind of, like, let Nintendo go, and I went the Sony way. And oddly enough now, like, the game console I play the most is Microsoft's Xbox.
Yeah.
You know, my five-year-old self now would not even understand that. You know, like, Microsoft is where you play all your games? You know, what the hell? So I think the industry is just, it's insane how it's changed. And Nintendo of now is not the dominant Nintendo that it was back in those days. And yes, you're right, though. They do come up with these consoles that are inferior technology, but they innovate in these other ways that, even though, like, the Super Nintendo, I think, was slower than the Genesis, and the N64, you know, had cartridges instead of CDs. And yet they still had this first-party support. You know, they had the Mario, they've got Metroid, they've got Legend of Zelda, they've got Kirby. You can always, like, fall back on that. Well, no matter what, they've got these amazing characters that all the kids love, and they'll buy that shit up. And then, you know, I don't know, maybe Josh or Charles, you can enlighten me when that stopped mattering as much, and the specs of the system... or something.
Well, I think it still matters. It still matters a lot. Like, you know,
but it doesn't matter to me, because I don't. I haven't turned on my Wii in like years, and I don't even care to play as good as Super Mario Galaxy 2 might be. I have no interest in playing that, and I just want to play my Xbox. I want to play what's on the Xbox.
That's basically just your problem. You should play Mario Galaxy. It's very good.
But you don't even own a Wii.
Right, but Mario Galaxy is good, and I've played it, and you should play
it. Right, you played it, but you didn't buy a Wii just to play it, so it's not that good. Whereas you bought a PS3 to play, like, whatever Team Eco came out with.
Right.
So you don't even believe your own words as much as...
Well, similar to you, you made a very good point that the moment that they announced Final Fantasy VII was going to be on the PlayStation instead of the N64 or whatever, was the moment that I stopped buying Nintendo consoles for good. But not just for that reason. I do think that that's one of the critical reasons that, you know, Nintendo hasn't been as friendly for third parties ever since then, since the SNES. They've just thought, we can make enough money from our first party stuff and from selling our consoles at a profit, unlike everybody else. We'll just keep doing that from now on. We have all these IPs that we'll just keep raping indefinitely. So I haven't bought a Nintendo since then, but I've tried to check in and play the best games on each system here and there on friends' systems or whatever. The other reasons are they kind of also abandoned the older or core gamer and kind of focused on kids or teenage, you know,
house moms
targeted saw it on games, Ellen. But then later on Wii, they targeted house moms and grandparents and stuff.
They kind of created that demographic as far as video games, because I'm not really sure it existed before.
They did.
And that's what gave them, like, such crazy, ungodly profits over the last few years since the Wii came out.
Right.
But, you know, I do think that having a strong... Sorry, Josh, I don't mean to interrupt.
Go ahead.
So having a strong, stable of characters... is important. Like, Sony just announced their Smash Brothers competitor, and it's kind of like, I think there was a Penny Arcade comic about, like, how goddamn lame their list of people who's going to be in that game is.
Oh yeah,
like,
let's get Kratos and the guy from God of War.
Yeah,
wait, that's the same guy.
That's the same guy, you assholes, right?
But they also pointed out that it's not necessarily because Sony doesn't have all these interesting characters; it's because
they're all third parties.
They chose really terrible ones.
Well, that's possible too. But the
Crash
thing is,
Bandicoot people.
They're all the ones that Sony can definitely use and can announce at the beginning of this development cycle are the first party characters. And so it's like the princess from Fat Princess, right? and so they have to go out and license and, you know, get all the third party characters who are directly associated with like Sony's real strength is their, you know, massive third-party base who are putting out these great games. You know, if they want to put someone from Final Fantasy in, they could, but they have to go license it from Square. If they want to put Crash Bandicoot in, they could, but they have to go license it, right? They don't own those. They're not first-party.
But characters. Because they aren't, like, all the same type of childish game, basically, like, all the Nintendo's IPs can be cartoonized and fit in the same universe very easily. Like, Sony has more first-party games, you know, but it wouldn't really work to put Yorta from Ico, like, in a Smash Brothers fighting
that would
cartoony
be great,
game. It'd be great, but it wouldn't. It would be terrible. It'd be ridiculous, right?
But the point of those games is to be, like, crazy and ridiculous.
You know, pulling from Uncharted, too, I'm not sure that's doable. Did they not? Are they
gonna totally should. They're like Nathan Drake should definitely be a
character.
I don't
think that would work.
They had Solid Snake in the last Smash Brothers.
Oh, man. They did?
Yeah.
They did. Yeah.
That sounds ridiculous.
I know, but those games are all about being crazy ridiculous. No, he looks like Snake, but he's just like fighting with Pikachu. One of his moves is to hide in a cardboard box.
Yeah, it's pretty sweet.
All right, eco fighting with them would be pretty tight.
I think another thing also that we all already agree and just haven't mentioned yet is that Nintendo never, and to this day, has not gotten on the bandwagon completely with social and network gaming.
Oh, God, online stuff is
like,
so bad.
They've always come from it from a very different philosophy where, you know Microsoft is you know, they... And PlayStation Network to a certain degree, you know, that's what you think of when you think of online gaming, if not the PC. But almost nobody really thinks of like Nintendo's offering, whether it's playing with other people,
it's horrible,
or downloading games, like just
friend codes.
They're just constantly behind, and they put restrictions, and they just don't seem interested in really competing.
I think it's another intentional thing. I mean, when you're a parent of kids or teenagers playing games. You get to control which games you buy for them or let them play or buy, but you can't really control their online experience. And it's a serious concern. If if I had an 8-year-old, I wouldn't let him go play Halo online. He'd just hear the most terrible things constantly, you know, and he'd develop this, I don't know, he might become racist and misogynist and stuff, right? I would be really worried about that. So I think it's an intentional thing. Nintendo like doesn't care about online, basically. Right. And they want to make it really hard. And they need to find a way to strike a balance between making it powerful, capable, and easy for adults that use the systems, but still have this like maybe by
parental
default
controls
by default and, on... Yeah. Parental control or something like
safety.
That.
Safety, yeah.
To really, like, prevent parents from letting their kids...
Yeah. Yeah, and I think it's possible for them to do both, but I don't think their concern is to do both. They're not trying to necessarily cater
to both. I think they haven't.
Both.
They certainly have not been, but yeah. I actually did just read a news story that Iwata said that... Satoru Iwata, who is the current president CEO, yeah. Said that that online is more of a focus with the Wii U, and they're going to try to improve. And he said, like, we know we need to improve in that regard. And so I think they're coming around to that realization. Like, it makes games a lot better. I can't believe we didn't talk about the fact that we played Journey, but we just played Journey right before this, before we started recording the podcast. We should have talked about that before now. That's crazy.
Oh, yeah, we played Journey. That's good.
And Journey does some really amazing things with online that would have made it a completely different game if they weren't there. And it's just another capability that game designers can use to make their games compelling. And that it's really hard to do that if you have to have a friend code for everybody who is able to connect to your system.
Yeah, the way that they handle multiplayer where, you know, you don't choose who you play with. It's just if you have a connection and... you are randomly paired with someone in a level and you can't speak to them except by like basically flashing your in-game alphabet like name to them. But you can help each other get through the game.
Yeah, you are basically just yelling your name at the person in Journey.
It's
just like, Charles! Charles!
Charles!
Charles!
Charles!
Charles!
Charles!
Charles!
Charles! Charles! Yeah, but it's brilliant. And
it's a musical tone, though. It's a bit prettier than that.
Charles! Charles!
Well, it's very pretty in the game, but that's essentially what you're doing. You're just over there like, Josh! Josh!
I was thinking, Josh. I was thinking hello or hey the whole time.
Yeah.
Because it's just a tone.
Yeah, and but it's your the little glyph is your name.
Yeah, but the visual effect that isn't necessarily identical to the audio effect.
Right? I'm just envisioning the what's happening inside the game, right?
Yeah, that's funny. But when I was playing
jokes.
The game,
yeah, that's
I was
funny. People. You're an asshole.
You're a funny asshole, but you know. But you know, this could have worked on the Wii. Like this kind of multiplayer is exactly the kind of multiplayer that could work on a Nintendo platform because it doesn't require a friends list and you still get to have a really interesting, unique experience with another person that is quote unquote safe.
Yeah.
Like you could trust your children.
But
to play
Nintendo
with them.
Has never done this to it.
Yeah.
Right.
To my awareness.
Right. They're missing out on this boat
for
no reason that I can think of besides they just don't do it.
Yeah. They need to take a lesson from Demon Souls.
Right. Yeah. Dark Souls, Demon Souls, the same kind of, you know, I mean, you know, if, It sometimes it's a little frustrating, you know, maybe you want to talk to your in-game person, but I think it suits the game the way they did it. I don't think having a chat box would have enriched the gameplay, even though some people might have wanted to talk to them. It was very, I don't want to really ruin any of the game, so I don't want to talk about the ending and our discussion, but it was interesting.
Do we want to point anything else out about Nintendo?
I didn't have anything else to say. I think that, you know, they might be headed in the right direction at this point.
I was just curious about your guys' idea or thoughts.
You just said your guys's.
Yeah. Your guys' apostrophe S.
Oh, y'all's. Your guys's.
Just say
worst.
Y'all's.
Use guys'
just your.
Use guys'
I was curious
opinions.
About your.
So the opinions that you two people hold on this matter of you've played the Wii and you've played a Kinect. You may have even played a PlayStation Move. I mean, I went to E3 when it came out, so I played it. And so, you know, it's a Wii, but better, like more accurate.
Right.
Have
you used the Wii Motion Plus?
I've not used the Wii Motion Plus.
Have you used that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
and you've used the Move? Are they basically about the same?
No, the Move's still better.
Move's still better?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Way more accurate.
Okay.
But I'm curious.
The
like,
Wii Motion Plus isn't magic. It's just slightly better accelerometers and stuff and a gyroscope.
I thought it was supposed to be the one-to-one thing that you were trying to
no,
get.
No. No. No.
God, no. Just, Jesus, no.
Jesus, no. It's slightly better accelerometers and gyroscope. The PlayStation is very, very good.
It's all those and the camera tracking.
Yeah. Because the camera tracking keeps the accuracy much closer to one-to-one.
Cool.
So I was really excited about the Wii. I'm sure Josh remembers, like, I was hyped. I thought it was going to be sweet. I was let down a little bit, not necessarily because it wasn't one-to-one, because I figured, first iteration, probably not going to be that great. But moreover, after playing that and the Kinect for a while, I'm not really sure I'm excited about, you know, this kind of new paradigm of controlling a game, because it's funny because these five episodes of the podcast we've done so far, pretty much every game we've talked about that we've been excited about that we get into, you know, okay, maybe we're hardcore gamers, but regardless of that, none of them have been a motion controlled game. Like we still really enjoy a controller and sitting down and not having to get up, not having to move. Like, I'm not excited about those games. It's not that they're not fun. It's not that they're not worthy of playing, but they're not the games that go down, you know, in our best game ever, at least not yet. So are you still excited about these?
So in my opinion, motion controls are a type of controller, right? Rock Band is best played, I think most people would agree, on fake instruments. Right? Rock Band is best played on like a drum kit and a plastic guitar and that sort of thing, right? And can you use your drum kit or your plastic guitar for that many other games successfully? Right? Pretty difficult. Possible, but pretty difficult. Like there was is it Fret Nice? Is that what it was called?
Yep.
A platformer that uses
the guitar.
The guitar,
yeah.
I didn't actually try it, but did you try it?
I didn't know.
But I'm sure it was probably somewhat functional.
But I think you basically play Guitar Hero and or Rock Band type licks to cause your character to do stuff. But it's not like you press a button to jump. You're like trying to, you're basically playing the soundtrack and causing your
character to
do
stuff.
Yeah, see,
I already played
cool
that game. It was called Jammer Lammy. And that was awesome.
Right. I played it with my thumb. But a DDR pad is like the ideal method to play DDR, right? But how many other games can you play well with a DDR pad?
I think I see where you're going with this, but I'm not sure that it's a fair comparison.
I think it is, because the Kinect is a Dance Central controller. It is, like, perfect for Dance Central, and I have not yet been convinced of any other good uses for it. There are a couple other uses that are somewhat successful, or even maybe to varying degrees, you could say very successful. Like the Fire Pit game by, what was that called? Happy Action Adventure Funtime Theater. Oh.
Happy Action Theater. It's not Fire Pit. It's,
Was that well, the that's Wavy one Tube of the mini games in it.
Was that the Wavy Tube Man one?
No. Oh. That was Gunstringer.
Oh, that was sweet.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
But yeah, Happy Action Theater does some neat stuff. You know, it's a fun...
It's a Double Fine game.
Right. Yeah. You know, Gunstringer is... the Wavy Tube Man, particularly part of Gunstringer, is pretty fun. Uh-huh. You know,
once.
Unique. Once. But it could have also been done with, like, a plastic gun or something. Right.
Yeah.
And similarly, the Wiimote is a brilliant Boombox controller, right? Mm-hmm. Or Wii Sports. And I haven't been convinced of many other good games that use it well. What else? Pick one. I haven't played with the Move.
So there are two games that are coming out that use the Kinect in an interesting way, one of which I have no interest to play, but one of which does interest me. The not interesting one is there's this game coming out. It might actually already be out. It's called, I think, NBA Beats. And it's sort of like Dance Central, except you hold an actual physical basketball at the same time, and you're dribbling the basketball, and it's basically teaching you basketball handles to the beats of like hip hop music.
Oh no! Are you gonna like throw it through your legs and stuff and hit the TV?
Yeah, you're
it?
Doing the handles,
and
like
if you
see
spin
on,
it
like,
on your finger, you
tour.
Get combos for as long as you can hold it.
But it's basically Dance Central, except you also are dribbling a basketball, which sounds crazy.
It's
and
gonna
weird.
Have the biggest like insurance disclaimer warning at the beginning.
Please
balls
be careful.
Into the TV.
Dear God. Yeah. So that's interesting at least. Although I don't really think I would want to play it, but
you'd want to try it.
I would.
Yeah,
want to
you
try
would.
It.
Yes, you would.
Yeah, you totally.
Josh
would.
Is gonna get it. We're gonna try it. Yes, that's what's gonna happen.
I'm sure your neighbors downstairs will be in love with that. But there is the new Steel Battalion coming out, which is the first game I'm aware of that Microsoft has allowed you to both hold and use the regular Xbox controller and do Kinect movements.
Forza doesn't.
Does it do, well, like the head tracking?
Yeah, head dragging, yeah.
Okay, yeah. So it's not the first one. But apparently, instead of selling you the $200 Steel Battalion controller with 40 buttons on it, you have controls that exist out in front of you in space, and you reach out to flick
your hand to it?
To flick a switch,
oh,
or
with
you
no
throttle
feedback.
Up. With okay. no direct feedback, but the people who I've heard who have played this game, and this is all just from other podcasts, have said that they...
That are worse than ours.
That are much worse. Fuck you, giant bomb, right in the ass.
Jeff and G, eat a dick.
Yeah. We have the total Boston-New York syndrome going on.
Rivalry!
Like, Boston thinks there's a rivalry and New Yorkers don't know a fucking thing about that city. But that sounds interesting. And you have parts where like you climb out of the tank by standing up and you can look around, right? And that's where I think it gets interesting for me because there are just things that work best with a controller. You have a degree of, options and capabilities. There are just more control inputs on a controller than exist in the world. But if you can start mixing them both together, then I think it gets really interesting. And I am excited about that game.
So that sounds really promising.
Yeah.
But again, it's like one type of, or one game potentially, or mm-hmm. one type. And so... I think my point is still like valid that each motion control input device is kind of useful for maybe one particular or a couple games that use it successfully, and otherwise it's a waste of time, mm-hmm. and it doesn't seem like it should be integrated into the console or
it's like the Maraca controllers for some of
they're not the end all be all.
Yeah, I agree with Josh, but I think the problem is that Microsoft and Nintendo and Sony are pushing these things as if throw away your other controllers, you know, you are the controller now. Like, we are in a new era, and we're really not.
Well, they're following the money, and they saw Nintendo like sell a bunch of consoles to old folks' homes and moms and stuff.
Yeah.
And right. So Yeah, Microsoft and Sony are basically like we want some
Me
of that.
Me too.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I think that's what they're trying to do. I'm not sure they're going to be super successful. But that Steel Battalion concept sounds really cool because the Vita does something very, very similar that I think that I've used it and I think it's very successful, which is that it has the dual analogs, it has all the buttons, but then it has a touch screen, mm-hmm. and it doesn't...
Touch surface on the back, too, right?
That, too.
Yeah.
Which I'm not necessarily sold on. I haven't seen a great use of it yet. But the touch screen right next to your thumbsticks, etc., is brilliant, because in Unit 13, which is this demo for a first-person shooter that looks like a low-budget modern warfare or something like that... when you have grenades, it pops up a little grenade button mm-hmm. on the UI
yeah.
Right next to your thumb. So it's like an extra button, but it's a contextual button.
Yeah.
Right? Or when you're behind cover, a little jump over cover or run to the right from cover button both show up on the screen and you can touch either
yeah,
one.
Yeah, that's great.
They're all these contextual buttons that pop up on the screen while you're you know, using the sticks and the regular standard buttons. And it's brilliantly done, and I hope more games on the Vita do that. I'm really excited, actually, more so about the Vita's possibilities with the touchscreen and regular controller buttons integrating and being used like that. I'm more excited about that than the Kinect or the Move or the Wiimotes mm-hmm. or the new Wii U touchscreen thing. That might be similar. The Wii U touchscreen thing might have the same potential, except that I think, aren't they making it a resistive screen that needs a stylus?
I don't know that it needs a stylus. A resistive screen doesn't inherently need a stylus.
Basically does.
It just needs to be
terrible.
Pressed.
They feel terrible with
they
your
They don't
fingers.
Feel great. I think it is resistive, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's definitely the wrong move.
Wait, Nintendo completely. Making stuff that's like yeah. a generation behind again?
Yes,
yeah.
completely the wrong move.
I mean, that's just a price point thing, right? Like, we can't have a console that costs $700, you know what I mean?
And the capacitive screens are so cheap now.
No, they're not. Like, an iPad, an iPhone only costs $200 because it's subsidized out the ass, right?
No, I mean, this Nook costs me $60.
Yeah, but it doesn't
infrared.
Have resist.
It's not resistive.
It's not capacitive.
You're right, but it yeah. feels as
not,
good as capacitive.
And it's not color either.
So if granted, they used yeah. infrared or whatever technology they need to get to that level of sensitivity, mm-hmm. you know, if they magically have resistive that feels as good as modern capacitive,
well,
then that'll
be cool,
but I doubt it.
Well, that doesn't necessarily feel as good because you only use, like, swipe left and swipe right. Am I correct in that? Like,
you are potentially correct because I haven't done...
You don't really
I haven't
use
played,
super fine... controls on that thing.
Yeah, I haven't played Angry Birds yeah. or Fruit Ninja on it or anything, but there is a touchscreen keyboard on it, and that's very accurate and quick.
Okay. Yeah. So yeah, who knows? You know, you'd want it to be as good as possible. I think that the Wii U does offer interesting options in terms of asymmetric gameplay. I think that's something that hasn't really been capable, that has not been really an option until
yeah.
recently. There were a few, like, Nintendo, you could hook up four GBAs to a GameCube and play, like, Legend of Zelda in different ways, and there have been a few options around that. I think you can use, like, four iPhones and an iPad to play Scrabble, right? And so that's...
Most expensive game of Scrabble ever.
Right, that's a game of... But that's the use of asymmetric information, right? I know my tiles and nobody else does.
Right.
So those options and ideas are interesting and could be really cool, but...
Yeah,
you know,
I mean,
again, it's like we're doing this other cool thing
yeah.
that isn't just like having a system that can play all the games and yeah. have the cross-platform support. And
yeah, similar to the Wii. I mean, it does something different that hopefully like a couple of developers will take advantage of with like one or two killer apps, but it doesn't make me think that that's going to be the next best console to get.
Yeah.
You know, the next best console to get is going to be the one that has every multi-platform game. That, you know, that all these developers are now trying, all the big budget AAA titles in general are multi-platform, except for the ones that are still owned or controlled by, you know, Sony or whatever. And so the next best platform to get is going to be the one that has all those games,
mm-hmm.
but has better online features, a better friends list, you know, is either cheaper or has, you know, on par or slightly better graphics or just better basic features. It's
yep.
it's such a weird race now of minor features that, but nobody has gotten them all right yet. You know, the Xbox has the best online, but has a terrible dashboard, you know, and some other flaws. But
so Nintendo, are we really? Yeah. What's the verdict? I give them 6 months.
You know, I actually read somebody who was saying, who made a interesting, although not ultimately compelling, argument that Sony should buy Nintendo. And they had a bunch of weird points about that. But what I think they should actually do, honestly, is they should license their shit. They should start making third party. They're like, we have this cool thing. This is our console. You know, it does these cool things, and we're going to make some games that you can only play on it. But the next Mario Galaxy, you can play with PlayStation Move, right? I think that's the way that they should go. Because they would sell so much, because that's the hardcore audience that is not like, well, I'm not going to buy a Wii U for the three games over the course of the 5 years of the console life that I actually want to play, right? But I will fucking buy it on PlayStation, or I will buy it on Xbox.
I wish they had gone that route. Because
so basically the route of Sega?
Yeah. But no, they can keep making their console. They can keep making their console, and they can keep selling this... the new stuff, their, you know, their motion control stuff and the Wii U, to this broad new market that they identified and tapped into with the Wii. But, you know, they can keep doing that, and I think they will still make money doing that. And there are a few sort of niche third parties making, you know, fairly low budget games that can do well in that ecosystem. But their first party exclusives should also be available on other consoles. Maybe that's just a fanboy in me, but I'd love to be able to play that.
I definitely agree with your fanboyishness.
Yeah.
I don't think they've been making good consoles, and I wish all their games were available on consoles I owned, because I would buy them. They'd make another sale here.
Yeah, me too.
Agreed. I would also like to play those games.
Cool. Nintendo. All right.
So we're at about the hour 45-minute mark already. I don't know. Do we want to do a BGE, or do we want to wrap it up?
We could skip it.
Okay. All right. Well,
next week, best game ever. Not now. There are no additional good games right now.
All right, host, start hosting.
All right. So we ran out of time. Thanks for joining us. Let's do a reminder about social networks.
Social. Be social. Talk to people. Go talk to that girl you think is cute. Ask her out. She might say yes. Oh, wait. Oh, about the podcast. All right. So we're on Twitter at Escort Mission. We're also on Facebook at Facebook.com/pages/the-escort-mission or something. We're on Google Plus too at, you know, plus.google.com/p/6affqp23, no, 4. Just go to theescortmission.com, people. I don't really need to say all that stuff. It's all there. We have pretty icons.
And click on our Amazon link and give us a couple percent for free.
Yes. So that we can buy lavalier mics and do Gorilla portable live podcasting at Comic-Con.
Yeah, we have big plans about live podcasting.
That could be pretty sweet if we did that. Because tickets are sold out, so we're not getting in.
No, we're not getting in.
But we're going to be out.
We're going to be on the street. Gorilla podcast.
we'll try to like go up to people who walk by and, you know, do interviews with them. Hey, how do you feel about the Escort Mission? I haven't heard of that. Oh, all right.
Yeah. Why not?
They're going to have.
Yeah. That's us.
I have no feelings about that whatsoever.
How do you feel about escorts? All right.
All right. Thanks, folks. That's the Escort Mission.
Cheers. Podcast
Have a good week.
Late.